Ever catch yourself thinking, I could do this on my own? If you're a safety officer with real-world skills, you don't have to wait for permission to build your freedom. On Saturday, January 31st, I'm hosting Safety Consultant 101, a free live workshop. In 2 hours, I'll help you package your expertise into a service clients will pay for and set pricing boundaries so you don't get stuck doing free advice forever. Register now at safetyconsultant101.com. Let's build your freedom.
Yo, howdy, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. We are continuing on with our action-oriented mini-series on human and organizational performance and beyond. Today, we are talking CSCL. Let's go. To another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at the Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Welcome to the Hop Nerd Podcast. Whether this is your first time here or you are a long time hanger outer. Yeah, this is the place where we get to have fun and interesting conversations about human and organizational performance and really, really beyond. I was just having a conversation with my buddy Becky Ray just the other day, an episode which will be coming out shortly, probably very shortly after this one. And we're having that conversation around human and organizational performance and what that really means. And this idea of kind of boxing that in isn't all that helpful, just saying, well, it's hopping, it's just this. It's not just that. And I think you know that if you've been a part of this conversation for more than a minute, the way that we describe human and organizational performance, at least around these parts here, at least the official Hop Nerd LLC definition of human and organizational performance, sounds more like this. It sounds like a collection of better ideas, beliefs, and assumptions from diverse and varying sources that we apply through the lens of a core set of principles. Now, I'll tend to add on to this, especially if you've been in one of my keynotes or in one of my workshops, there'll be a dot, dot, dot. And it's the dot, dot, dot leads us towards the whole point of this thing, to help create an environment in which operational learning is possible. Leading through these principles helps us create an environment where people can tell us the truth, where we gain access to this meaningful operational information that we need to learn and improve and innovate over time. It helps us as leaders gain access to this information so that we can actually be good leaders. Hey, you need information. You need damn good information if you want to be a damn good leader. Leading through these principles helps us do just that. I was scrolling through the interwebs on the battlefield that is known as LinkedIn, and all that's a little too harsh. There's a lot of great stuff on LinkedIn. But especially nowadays, there seems like there's a lot of this kind of AI stuff, and it's all dead giveaway. You see it. I see it. Yeah, it's not good. Here's the cold, hard truth. My cat taught me how to be a great leader. It's not good. But yeah, I came across some of those varying definitions of hop, and they're not wrong. I don't see many of them that are just like flat out wrong. But it doesn't feel like it really captures what we're trying to do. Like I saw one the other day. There's a big hop conference something going on somewhere, which means tons of posts with people standing in front of like their favorite slide. And I get it here. Listen, don't judge someone's presentation by a picture of a slide that you don't understand the entire context behind. I see this happen on the interwebs all the time where somebody's like, I don't agree with the slide. Well, you have no clue what was said about that slide. Yeah, so this is not a judgment. Bad. Like I said, I think the definitions are mostly right, but I've seen several of these where it's like, human and organizational performance is a science-based approach to improve safety and to do safety and safety and safety. And if we're sticking with the safety thing, it's never going to be as impactful, as useful as it was supposed to be. Hop isn't a safety something. Okay, don't get me wrong. It definitely helps with safety somethings. And a lot of times, safety is where we start our human and organizational performance journeys within our organizations. But you shouldn't end it at being a safety something. pro tip for all my big organization friends out there, and I've been spending time, or small organization friends out there, any of you guys that are going down this path of human and organizational performance, you know that if you had me out, that's one of the first things that I tell you is that if you make this a safety something, you are minimizing the return on your investment. Period. Yeah, you're not getting the most bang for your buck. You can make it a safety something, and it's going to be useful to you, but it's going to minimize the return on your investment. And I don't know. I think you should be trying to maximize the return on your investment. So with the side rant out of the way around human and organizational performance and the definition of what human and organizational performance is, we're continuing on with our action-oriented mini-series here, focusing on just that, human and organizational performance and beyond, all the things that we would roll up into this under that definition that I tend to apply to human and organizational performance that allows us to move beyond just the five principles and bring in things like those key ideas, the tenets of safety differently, more actionable ideas that maybe rest beyond, closer to the work of human and organizational performance, like the 10 ideas, and to pull in new ideas and fresh ideas, and to pull in maybe old ideas. Yeah, some of that stuff works too. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, as we say every time around here in our little disclaimer before we get into the actual actionable part of our episode. So we're in a bit of a tweener episode. Yeah, we're in between. So the next episodes following this one, we're going to move into those three core tenets of safety differently. But I was reflecting over the past couple days since we released our last one, and I wanted to go a little bit deeper into this idea that we shared during one of the episodes of CSCL, Care, Stabilize, Communicate, Learn, an actual something that you can use to move from react to respond, because that's something that you can actually do. That's something that you can actually give your leaders in particular right now. Hey, when things go wrong, do this. Yeah, before you freak out, before you panic, before you melt down, do this. Here are some great questions to ask and answer. Buy yourself a little bit of time. We've got to answer these anyways. These are the most important things right now at this moment. And then let's start to think about how we can learn about this. So care, stabilize, communicate, and learn. That's what we're unpacking today. But before we get to that, do me a favor, head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com. You can check out the services. You can book an initial consult. You can explore Starting Points, our handy dandy little card deck. More on that in just a second. You know there's going to be more on Starting Points. It's too useful to not tell you more on Starting Points. But you can also go over to the free resources page. You can download all those videos in that player there on the free resources page. All those funny, wacky videos that I make. You can also download a copy of this CSCL post-event framework for your leaders. Yeah, you can download it and use it. How cool is that? You can download our Starting Points printout guide thing with questions in it. Yeah, and you can go try those questions out before you order the card decks if you want. Yeah, pretty stinking cool. Not as handy as the card decks because they're in a PDF and they're on big full-size paper. Yeah. But speaking of Starting Points, we are working with tons of organizations to license those card decks. And what makes that super duper cool is that we can customize those card decks. You can customize those in your colors with your logos, with some customized questions and on. Pretty stinking cool. Or you can just buy the original card decks because those are handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Yeah, no training, no customization. We've got card decks. We're asking better questions. It's a great way to start pre-event operational learning and bake it into your day-to-day by making it informal and easy. Yeah, great stuff. And if you need a hand on your human and organizational performance journey, the year is getting full. And not too full. I got plenty of time to come out and help you. I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off, but that's how I like it. And if I'm going to be doing that, I want to be doing it running around like a chicken with my head cut off through the airport coming to hang out with you. Yeah. So thehopnerd@gmail.com. I'm happy to help you with all things human and organizational performance and beyond, as we've mentioned. So with all that out of the way, let's jump into today's episode talking about CSCL, a post-event framework. Welcome back to the What Now mini-series. We're going to keep chug-a-lug-a-lugging right along with these action-oriented episodes around human and organizational performance. And as we've mentioned, today we're talking about what you can do, what you can actually do to move from react to respond when it hits the fan within our organizations. When things go sideways, how to move from reacting with emotion in the heat of the moment to responding thoughtfully when things go wrong. Yeah. And so what I really like, what we've created here, is this CSCL framework. So what happens when the unexpected happens? We have a unintended operational surprise, a hiccup, a safety event, a sudden crisis. Our first instinct as people is to just leap into action. And that's usually to leap into action through reaction, through panic, through melting down, through freaking out, through throwing chairs. Even if we don't do that or say that, our face says that that's what we want to do, that we might be saying, it just shows it. Yeah. But what's the most effective way? Is panic and freaking out and all that stuff really the most effective way to show people, to show people that our goal is to move towards learning, to demonstrate care for our employees post-event? I don't think panic's it. Now, I will say that I think our organizations have propped up, maybe even encouraged, likely encouraged, overreaction from our leaders in these events. Does that sing a little bit? Yeah, but we have. And what I mean by that is this. If I'm that leader that hears that news, especially of a safety event, or insert anything else that we genuinely care a lot about here with in our organizations, but I'm going to use a safety event as the example. I hear that news and my face turns red and I start sweating and my mouth does that thing where I'm like chewing on my lip and you can tell, my eye starts twitching. You can tell my blood pressure is skyrocketing. My leg starts shaking. And then I just, yeah. And then from there, I go down this path of questioning, this not very curious at all path of questioning. This sounds like, who was it? Were they wearing gloves? Were they following the rules? Who was it? Who messed up? Bring them to me to care for them. And I continue down this path of who was it? How did they mess up? What do they deserve? Well, of course, they messed up. I found they messed up because people always mess up. But I found that they messed up, so I fire them. And beyond that, I just generally freak out. I just have this emotional reaction to this safety event, this make-believe safety event that we're talking about. Kool-Aid man through the wall into the department where it occurred, and I start like grabbing employees by the hair of their head and flinging them out the window. Fired! 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 Yeah, I go around screaming and yelling and stand downs about how we need to be better and try harder, and if only you pesky employees cared more about not hurting yourselves and stuff like this, you would never ruin my day again. I would do all that stuff. What that signals, though, or at least from the organization's perspective, maybe other leaders, not down, obviously, we see that as kind of dumb, not unhelpful, not very useful, useless. Yeah, we see that down through the organization as pretty useless. And we take that information and we onboard it and we process it. And it tells us that we probably shouldn't tell you about stuff like this anymore, because if you're going to act like a child, you can't handle the truth. And if you can't handle the truth, I'm not going to tell you the truth. Of course, I'm not going to lie to you, but I'm not going to tell you anything that I don't absolutely have to tell you. Yeah, that's the signal that goes down through the organization. But back to this idea of the organization mostly propping this up. We've got that image of that leader, and you've experienced that. You have experienced that. Yeah, if you haven't experienced that, you've just not been around long enough. I would say that you were within the first few days of a career in our organization such as ours. Now, flip the script on that. Imagine that leader, right, that information comes to, and they go, thank you for the information. I need a little bit of time. Not long. I need 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes. That leader doesn't melt down, doesn't react. Thank you for the information. Takes a beat, goes outside, goes in their office. Yeah. When they return, their demeanor is level, normal. Okay. Yep. Let's not panic. Let's not freak out. okay, let's figure this thing out. Okay. Or people hurt. Okay. Nobody's hurt. Cool. That's great. Yeah. Listen, take time to really understand this. Yeah. I don't expect you to go out there right there at this moment. Everything's fine. Our operations are safe, stable, and secure. Nobody's hurt. Nothing's actively going wrong at the moment. We don't need to rush into this and ruin your weekend. There's no sense in that because this stuff always happens at like, what, 5 p.m. on Friday? Yeah, you know the safety folks. Monday morning, we'll start digging into it. Let's take a couple weeks, really understand it. Calm, cool, collected. You get where I'm going with this example. Flip the script, the exact opposite of the first leader that we described. The interesting thing that tends to happen in our organizations is that when we freak out, meltdown, panic, the first leader example, those people are usually described as the organization as this. A little hot-headed, but, you know, they really care. They wouldn't be so emotional about it if they didn't care. Yeah, they mean business. They mean business. See the way they just freaked out, jumped through the wall, started firing people? Yeah, Kool-Aid! Yeah, and then started firing. Yeah, yeah, you see that? They care so much that while they were at home over the weekend, yeah, they made all their employees stay and investigate that event. They really mean business. They take this safety stuff very seriously. Now, how do we describe the other example within our organizations? Not so kindly, do we? Okay. Good for nothing. Slow. Like, come on. Like, yeah, it's not, like, nobody was hurt. Yeah, there's nothing crazy going on. We don't have to investigate this over the weekend, but by not investigating over this weekend, they're just because they're lazy. They don't care enough about safety. Did you see the way they didn't even react? Like, they didn't even flinch when we told them bad news. Like, this is usually up in the organization or leaders surrounding this leader. They're saying these things. As we said, this is not down through the organization. Down through the organization, the person's saying, you're right. This week, this can wait till Monday. Oh, did you see the way he didn't freak out? Like, that's good. Like, we told him the truth, and he just took it as information. My God, this is so, I can tell this person the truth. But around that leader and above that leader, it tends to sound like they don't care enough about safety. They don't care enough. If they cared more, they would shit their pants. Yeah, they would pee on the ground and then roll around in it if they cared enough about safety. They would fire people. Yeah, they would show people that we mean business. Yeah, they would do that. Yeah, so our organizations definitely prop this up. So I think sometimes we even just set the expectation that that's what leaders are supposed to do. Like, when things go wrong, we're supposed to, like, melt down, freak out, and that's not very helpful. Back to the entire point of our episode today and the framework that we're discussing, our CSCL post-event framework. And what I'm saying here, I think this is the right place to start, is because I think leaders move towards react for a lot of reasons, and some of them good ones. I think that we move towards react because of the expectations that are placed upon us by the organization, or maybe it's what we've seen or been taught, or maybe that reaction has garnered us lots of success before. We've gotten the pats on the back for overreacting and taking safety super seriously by just beheading people post-event. Yeah. There's a lot of good reasons. There's a lot of good reasons why we move towards react instead of towards a response. And again, we leaders are people too. Just like any normal person on the planet, we do things that make sense to us at the time. And we just described several reasons how that would make sense to us at the time in that moment. And the one that we haven't touched on yet, though, which I think is probably the biggest one, is it feels like the right thing to do in the moment. And it's a very human reaction. Of course it is. Our brain has been thrust into fight, flight, fawn kind of mode, and we're not really thinking clearly. We've had information that has been presented to us that challenges our assumptions about the organization, that scares us. Yeah, we're in that situation where our brain thinks we're being attacked by a bear. Of course, that's where we're at. Our brain can't quite understand, because that's a very useful skill to us if you're actually being attacked by a bear. But when our brain thinks it's a bear, but it's actually just information, and information that it is our duty to do something with right now and beyond, fight, run away, everything else in between, isn't very useful to us. So we need something that we can do to move us in a better direction, especially in these moments of high intensity, especially in these moments that are primed up for us to just freak the F out, especially in these moments where we're probably, likely, not thinking very clearly. Before we get into the framework, though, you know what's next. It is our disclaimers. I do not know you, and I do not know your organization. And what I mean by that is I do not understand. I do not know the operational reality that your organization lives in, the context. I do not know any of that stuff from sitting on this side of this microphone chatting with you on a podcast. The only way that I know that kind of stuff is coming out and spending time with you and your organization and seeking to understand. So I don't know. I can't give you a prescription. I can't tell you what to do. Well, I could, but I would just be guessing. Anyone that shows up telling you, I know what to do, and I have no clue about your organization, but this works for everybody, they're lying to you. And I'm not one of those people. But with that said, though, everything that I'm going to share with you is built on real-world application of human and organizational performance. Real-deal stuff. Stuff that's been created down in the muck, down in the trenches, down in that hole, in that confined space, hip-to-hip with those leaders. Yeah, that's where I live, and that is where I have lived my entire life with human and organizational performance, is answering the question that we're trying to answer a bit on this podcast. What now? So take these ideas, and if they sound like something that would work for you based on your deep understanding of your organization, give them a shot. Don't be afraid to tweak or tune them. You should tweak or tune them. Of course you should. You best understand your work world. Next, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I tend to tell you that certain things are crap based on my experience, and I found them to be crap, and many people have found them to be crap, and they might just be crap in 99.9% of the circumstances, the situations where you find insert something here in use. But if it's working for you and your organization, and I mean really working, not you thinking that it's working, and everyone else behind your back going, that doesn't work, but he really loves it, and he won't. But really working. If it's really working, why in the heck would you stop doing it? Yeah, who am I? Yeah, who is anybody else? If it's working for you, and more importantly, if it's working for your people, don't stop using it. In fact, call me. I want to understand how it's working well for you and your folks. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. A common misconception, and not even a misconception, I think a blade, a knife that gets shoved in hop by folks out there, is that they just say, follow those five principles and all will be well. Throw away your lockout, tagout procedure. Get rid of it. Nope. Absolutely not. Now, the next thing I want to share with you is don't be afraid to get started. Yeah, start small. Take this stuff. Tweak it. Tune it, see how it works for you. It doesn't work, tweak it, tune it, try again. What I'm telling you is to do solutioneering, try storming, micro experimenting. Yeah, you're not going to find perfection with anything, but you can get started. Don't be the fence post sitter that goes, I'm not going to actually do anything. Yeah, don't do that. So I'm sure I'm leaving something out here from the disclaimer that we tend to throw in here, but I think it's important. The whole reason why I throw this disclaimer in here, and I'm sure that I've shared this in the past, but it's this, is that many of us in this community, in this bucket of what I would call real deal hot practitioners, people that actually help organizations do this stuff, not just bring in a canned something and say, here, do this, and human and organizational performance shall be yours. We get really, really, really nervous about saying, hey, go do this. Because what we mean by, hey, go do this, is what we just described, that whole disclaimer. Right, here's a really cool idea. This might work for you. Now, what other people sometimes hear when we say, hey, go do this, is Sam said, go do this. Just follow these steps and this will be, no. Man, that's the point. It opens up. It allows us to have this conversation more effectively. So with the disclaimer out of the way, let's start moving into a bit of our framework, our CSCL framework. Where we start is here. We don't even start with the C, the care part. In the immediate moments after hearing news that leaves you feeling a bit shook, yeah, it leaves you wanting to go down that leader one path. My face is turning red. This is scary. This is upsetting. I've dealt with this before. How could they not see? people are idiots, when it makes you want to go down that path, which is where all of this comes in really, really handy, the first thing you do is pause. Yeah. Step one, deliberately pause. The power of the pause. Before anything else, before we get to anything else, this framework emphasizes taking a deliberate pause, a deliberate breath. This isn't about inaction. It's about creating space for you to think clearly. We talked about that if we just, that's coming from, I've got to fight you, I've got to run away from you. And that doesn't work well. You're going to regret that. A pause buys you some time to not do that, to breathe. If you don't know breathing, the power of taking a breath, or the power of 4-7-8 breathing, you should try. You should try it right now. Just do this. And especially, just practice it now. And when that event happens, try 4-7-8 breathing. It's a tool that I use a ton when I deal with stress and challenging information. And just any of those things where it puts your brain into like hyper alert, my God mode. Even before I go on stage to do a keynote, I do 4-7-8 breathing at least once or twice or three times or four times, where you breathe in for a count of four, you hold it for seven, and then you breathe out for a count of eight. Yeah, so you breathe in with 4, yeah, hold it. Breathe out. Do that. Yeah, this is not hippity-dippity crap. Go Google 4-7-8 breathing. Not hippie crap, promise. It's not a feel-good. It actually works. So take that deliberate pause. This might be 30 seconds. It might be 10 seconds. It might be 4 or 5 minutes. It might be 10 minutes. You're no good to anyone involved in this situation if you're just going to melt down. You're just not. Yeah. So take the pause. Take the breath. Acknowledge what happened. Okay. And this is usually a dialogue that's happening inside of your brain bucket. Mm-hmm. Resist that urge to just charge in. Again, 30 seconds even, just allowing you to get centered. Take those breaths, acknowledge what happened, move towards facts. Focus on the facts. What do we actually know right now? Right now, what are just the cold hard facts of the event? And after you have taken this pause, you've taken this breath work a bit, and maybe you stepped out and you've returned, or maybe that's happened all right here standing directly after hearing that information in this 10, 15, 20 seconds after understanding this event. This is a crucial point for us because this sets up everything else that happens in the process. Make your first words curious words. Yeah, these are all actions. I've not told you anything that's not an action. You've deliberately taken the pause. You've said that this has happened. Even if it's just inside your head, you've acknowledged it. You've taken those breaths. You've taken that moment. You've got the immediate facts. You're ready to do something. The something that you do now. Make your first words curious words. Say it with me. You ready? Make your first words curious words. Yeah, because what we tend to do is make our first words accusatory words. Bad. Yeah, it sets up the rest of this process in a very, very, very negative tone. It takes us towards who if we start with accusatory words. But when we start with curious words, our first words are curious words, we start to move down that path of seeking to understand. We show people that we value and prioritize learning. So at this point in the process, we're all about setting ourselves up and everyone involved in this entire process up for success. Help me understand what happened. Okay, walk me through it. Walk me through it. Invite dialogue, not defensiveness. The question that we're answering here in the framework is this: how can my response demonstrate care and prioritize learning? It's a big one. How are we setting ourselves up for success through care and prioritizing learning. Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show. Well, if you skipped over the intro part of this podcast and went straight to the meat and potatoes, which is okay. I tend to share some pretty useful stuff back in there, though. And if you didn't hear this, I wanted to insert this here as well. That, you know, this What Now series is a blog cast, meaning that there are corresponding blogs to each one of these episodes over at thehopnerd.com. Just click blog, you'll see them. It's a great way to share what we're talking about here in kind of this mixed media format. Yeah, and one of the things, the reason why I bring this up here is that this guide that we're walking through, this framework that we're talking through, this CSCL post-event framework is available right there. You can find it in that blog cast episode over at thehopnerd.com, and you can download it and you can give it a shot. You can try this stuff. It's all written out right there really well, very shareable, or you can also find it under the resource section. So I wanted to insert that there before we continued on to step number two. We've centered ourselves. We've responded in the immediate sense with curiosity rather than accusations. We've done all that. We've set ourselves up for failure, and we've made our first words curious words. We move to step two, which is care. And it's exactly what it sounds like. Check on the humans. Yeah. Are we caring for all involved? What do these questions sound like that we need to answer? Do we have injured people? If so, who's getting them the care they need? Who's responsible for getting them the care that they need? Who else might be affected or shaken up by this event? Now, these folks are easy to overlook sometimes because we get really focused on the person that's got the boo-boo, and rightfully so. And we're already stressed and panicked and sometimes maybe borderline freaking out. Even if we have moved from reaction to respond, it's still a stressful time. We need to ask that question. Who else might need some help? Think about witnesses. Think about your location staff. Think about those people that we tend to put that big, macho, masculine energy on. Regardless of gender, we put big, macho, masculine energy on. The site manager, the site director, well, they're tough because they're the site manager. They definitely don't need. They might be tore up from the floor up with this event. Yeah. Of course they might. Think about the folks that are responding to this event, not just first responders and those people that are giving immediate care, but think about the folks that are going to be going in and learning about this event. They're going to be exposed. If this is more of a significant event, maybe even a tragic event, they're going to be exposed to a lot of stuff that normal everyday people aren't necessarily exposed to. And this might be brand new for them. And yeah, if you've been around here for a minute, you know, I spent a good amount of time in fire and EMS, and even folks like me, or you probably, many of us have been in fire and EMS. When we're exposed to those things, it still takes a toll, even if we're exposed to them every day. How are we helping those people? How are we supporting those people? How can we give them the immediate support that they need? Which leads us to another question, which is, how can we point those folks in the direction of practical help quickly? Yeah, we have EAP stuff. Can you share that EAP stuff? Does the EAP work really well? It should. Hopefully it works really well. Maybe even up to, should we deploy on-site resources to help these folks? Do folks just need that person that's hanging out in the conference room that you can go talk to? That stuff matters. Sometimes it's just, we need some help here. I'm overwhelmed. I don't need corporate to show up in the normal sense of I'm from corporate, I'm here to help. I just need hands. I just need people. I need someone here to do this for me so I can do that. How are we helping those folks? So care for all humans involved in the event. Step three is stabilize. Our people are being cared for. What's our current operational condition? Big one. And what I mean by big one is this. Are our operations safe, stable, and secure? If not, how can we make them safe, stable, and secure? Think in the short term and in the long term, in the sense of full restoration to normal state. How do we render our operations safe, stable, and secure? Who's the person? Who's responsible for doing that? And hopefully we're not just telling them to go do that. Are we supporting them with resources, people, and on to do that quickly and effectively? Which leads us to step number four in our framework. Communicate. We've cared for our people and stabilized the situation. Who needs immediate factual information? Who on the inside of the organization needs to know some facts now? Do we need to share this information with family members, external stakeholders, regulators? The follow-up question to that, if yes, is if so, who's the most appropriate people to be doing that? Don't just grab whoever's handy here, right? Ask, is this the right person to be calling their spouse? You need to think through that. Of course you do. I don't think a lot of times that having legal call the spouse is probably the most empathetic response that we can have to the situation. It might be, hey, listen, I know Jane. I know Jane's family. We hang out on the weekends. I'm going to drive over there and talk to Jane. Yeah, it shouldn't just be like, this is so-and-so from the so-and-so company letting you know that your husband doesn't have an arm anymore, and can you meet us at the hospital, please? Yeah, and my name is Esquire. And, of course not. That's hot garbage. Don't do that. Who's the right person? That's the real question here. Who's the right person? Now, on the other side of that, if you're calling the regulator because you have to report this event to the regulator, guess what? That person was Esquire after their name might be the right person. Yeah. Who's the most appropriate folks to be having that conversation? Use those folks. Next up, do we need to communicate this event to the public? And again, who's the most appropriate people to do that? Mm-hmm. You might have comms folks. They're usually trained in doing that. They know how to talk to the media. They know how to talk to local news outlets. Yep. Those are probably your people. Mm-hmm. Probably not. No. Camera, what? Light? Not bad. Probably not that person. Mm-hmm. Who's the most appropriate people to do that? And kind of to put a little bit of an ending on this communicate step, what's the best way to share this information with the rest of the organization? I think you might even need to rewind that a bit and say, do we need to share this with the rest of the organization? Ooh, of course we do. Okay, we always should share. Yeah, but when we always share everything, well, there was a paper cut and we did a 14-day investigation on this paper cut and we issued 47,000 corrective actions for this paper cut. The organization, the rest of us, look at that and go, that's stupid. And if we're not saying that stupid, you're sending me so much crap that it just gets buried and it's all important, so none of it's important. So be deliberate here. Well, of course, you should share, but share deliberately what's valuable to folks. We would screen these things a bit in the organizations that I worked in. It wasn't just on blast to the org every time something went a little bit wrong. We would be very deliberate. And is this of value to the organization? Does everyone need to know about this, or do some people need to know about this? If it is the some people need to know about this, who are those people, and how can we share this most effectively? Yeah. So back to our main question. What's the best way to share this information with the rest of the organization? But problem. We tend to be really, really good at sending out like, oh, my God, this happened. Ah. Yeah, we're pretty good at that one. We'll send out big videos and big memos, and we'll send out instructions for sites to just stop throughout our entire organizations to read this event alert so everyone knows that this happened. And then that's the last anyone ever heard of it. But that's the problem I'm highlighting. Yeah. So our next question, how will we communicate updates, learnings, and improvements over time? It's a big one. Because if you're not focusing on that ongoing communication over time, especially if it was important enough to share to begin with, and if it was important enough to share to begin with, And maybe it's not important enough to continue to share over the course of the next 30 days, month, year, with these things sometimes drag out pretty long. You should put that in the initial memo. Hey, this is information only. We found it important to share this with you. Here's some of the immediate stuff. We likely will not be sharing any more information about this event. If you would like more information on this event, here's the person that you can contact. Or if you would like to sign up to receive updates for this event and corrective actions, if any come out of this event, here's how you can do that. Yeah, that's a great way to do it. But if it's a big, hairy, scary something, people want answers. Word travels fast. People know throughout your organization before you ever send that first communication, and they're expecting to understand more about this event over time. They want to know how this happened. They want to know the learnings associated with this event, and they want to know what we're doing as an organization to improve that situation. Make sure you don't drop the ball there. Step number five, our final step in our CSCL post-event framework, is learn. We've taken care of all of the big, hairy, scary questions that we need to answer now. By doing so, not only have we responded appropriately, but we've bought ourselves some time to not freak out, panic, and start firing people. We've bought ourselves some time to start to put some thought into the depth of understanding we need to gain about this event. So the first question that we ask in step five is a pretty basic one. What basic information do we need together? Like right now, what's the basic facts that we need together about this event? What does that look like? How do we do that? What tool are we using to do that? Let's jump into a quick story time here really quick. So a client that I work with quite a bit, we'd been working on human and organizational performance stuff for a long time. We've been working on more formal learning teams for a long time. We were working on more informal learning teams with stuff like starting points, you know, helping them customize the card decks and just overall human and organizational performance support. And I remember there was this moment in this process where they just kind of got it. And what I mean by got it is what our accident investigation processes can be used for and a lot of times more effectively used for. It was that light bulb moment. And I remember we're sitting in the conference room, we're kicking over some stuff, chewing over some stuff. And they kind of described back to me what I'd been describing to them for a very long time, as if it were this like brand new idea that they'd never heard before, which I love. That's great when you're in my role. It's let me tell you what, really, that's a great idea. I've never heard, that's perfect. Yeah, yeah, it all came together. So they'd come to this realization that accident investigations aren't these like evil things, because they're not these evil things, that once we grow these better beliefs and assumptions and we start leading through this operating philosophy known as human and organizational performance, these things can get a lot better and we start using them more appropriately. Yeah. And by appropriately, what I mean is this. They shared with me that they viewed accident investigations as their information gathering tool. And this like factual, basic fact kind of information gathering tool. Answering that question in our framework that we were just discussing, right? What's the information that we need together right now? And how can we effectively gather that information right now? Ding, 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 winner, winner, chicken dinner. A well-written accident investigation process can do just that for you. Now, sometimes this was kind of their aha moment, or part of it, was that, like, wait a second, this thing isn't like the beginning and the end of a safety investigation. This thing is an information gathering tool. Can it be the end of the investigation? It absolutely can. Sometimes through accident investigation, a well-crafted one or a learning review, whatever words we want to put on this, we can gather that basic information. We discover that, hey, yeah, there's not like a ton that we need to dig into here. The folks that were involved in this accident investigation, we involved those nearest to the work just as we would any other kind of learning mechanism. And they taught us about this problem, and we actually just fixed that problem, and I think we're done here. Is there anything else that we need to do, folks nearest to the work? No, this is perfect. We're done. But based on that information gathering tool and a bit of problem solving there from time to time, sometimes we need to go a little bit deeper. We need to go into a learning team. We need to go into something else. And they found much success with thinking of their accident investigation process like this. They reframed it. Yeah, built on those, based on those better assumptions, beliefs, ideas that we talk about human and organizational performance being, this operating philosophy of human and organizational performance. They took out all the blame out of this process. They extracted all the disciplinary action and steps were usually right at the beginning of the process for disciplinary action. Back to some other episodes. Go back. If you haven't listened to those, go back and listen to those. That stuff's all packed in there. And they built this to be a process that helped them gather basic factual information about the event in the immediate sense. What do we need to know? What do we need to know right now? Are there things that we need to do right now? Are there actions that we can take from this basic factual information that we've gathered? And is that it? Are we good? They built in all the stuff that we know tends to work well, that we talk about in human and organizational performance. This wasn't just a team of safety practitioners going out with clipboards and badges to examine for wrongdoing. In fact, it was quite the opposite. They built a process that, yep, it involved safety folks, if it was a safety something. Of course it did. Yep, it involved some leaders of that direct area. Yeah, of course it did. But it also involved those nearest to the work, just like a learning team does. Yeah, pretty neat. Pretty neat. So a couple questions to ask yourself there around your accident investigation tool, whatever it is that you're using in for that process. Is this a fault-finding tool or is it an information-gathering tool? If it's a fault-finding tool, reframe it to an information-gathering tool. Are these investigators going out and investigating? Or is this a group of SMEs? SMEs, including SMEs of the work, i.e. the people that actually do the work. They're in that group too. Is this that group of folks going out seeking to understand the basic information, the basic facts of this event? Yeah, it's a pretty powerful shift in how we think about post-event accident investigation somethings. It's a huge, huge shift. So with story time out of the way and that first question of step number five out of the way, let's continue on to a little bit more. We've answered that question. What's the basic information that we need to gather and gather right now? We're gathering that information. The next question, the real powerful question that then builds off of that information: what is the best way to learn deeply from this event? What's the mechanism? What's the tool? What's the framework that we need to use here? What will work best? I share this a bunch. You know, learning teams are more of a lens, right, in which we view things. It's a framework, a not very rigid framework that's still a bit formal in many ways. But I don't think learning teams are the goose that lays golden eggs. Like, I don't think that you use a learning team for everything. I don't think that that works out very well. Maybe the tool that we use to learn deeply about this is, as we mentioned during our story time, maybe our accident investigation takes us where we need to go. And that's really the question that we're answering. What's going to take us where we need to go? Is it the accident investigation? Does this get us where we need to go? Maybe. Is it a learning team? Maybe. Maybe it's something way less formal. Maybe it's a quick huddle debrief. We've got those folks that experienced the event right here. We figured it out. We're done. Maybe it's a more formal learning review over time involving those nearest to the work. Maybe, just maybe, it's a root cause analysis. Who knows? And likely you'll find that it's a combination of different tools and approaches that will take you where you need to go. The question that you're answering here, though, is what's the best way to learn? It's not always going to be a learning team. It's not always going to be an accident investigation. It's not always going to be a quick huddle debrief. It's not always going to be an RCA. It's not always going to be a one right something. There's not one right something for everything. This is not a one size fits all. You have to answer that question. What's the best way to learn deeply about this event? Because if we're not learning deeply, we're not improving. Yeah, we're not making things that much better. Quick pause. Want to drive meaningful change, improvement, and innovation within your organization? The Hop Nerd LLC can help. Head over to www.thehopnerd.com to book an initial consult, to request a quote, to get in touch, or explore the services that we provide. Services like engaging workshops on human and organizational performance and safety differently, engaging workshops on learning teams, operational learning, curiosity, and improvement. We also offer services such as strategy and planning support and post-event learning reviews, keynotes, public events, and more, all built on real-world experience in the muck, in the mud, in the trenches kind of experience that we've gained doing this in real life, working internal to organizations, helping companies that we work with answer the question that sounds like, hey, this is great and all, but what now? How does this actually work? Yep, that's what I specialize in. You can learn more at thehopnerd.com or get in touch at thehopnerd@gmail.com. The Hop Nerd LLC can help you actually bring hop to life.
And now, the other thing that I want to insert here is this, is you should be thinking about that. Of course you should. But you should not be doing that until the dust settles. We get so excited by this idea of learning and improving, especially post-event, that we try to learn and improve while we're still in respond and contain mode. When you're working your way through this process, you're in respond and contain mode. Yeah. You're in respond and contain and gather facts mode. That's it. You're not in a position to learn deeply and improve yet. You're just not there. For one thing, you don't have all the information. For one thing, you've not given it enough time for more facts to bubble to the surface. I share this a ton with folks, especially when we're talking in workshops. That I ask this question here. I'll try it on with you. I'll ask you this question. How many of you out there have had to make event phone calls? And what I mean by that is somebody calls you and says, hey, boss, this happened. And then you have to share up that dumb paper phone tree that we use because for some reason we don't just lean on the systems that actually work and do all this stuff automatically. That works, but we still have to make phone calls because people get upset if they don't hear from you. Like 47 people don't hear. Yeah, okay, side rant. How many of you have done that? I would venture a guess here that all of you probably do that right now. When you get that phone call from that employee that's like, hey, I bumped into something with a truck. I got to tell you, I don't really know yet. Yeah, and then you make that phone call immediately because it has to be immediately or else up through your organization. You say, hey, we had an employee bumping into a truck. I don't know a lot right now, but as soon as I know more facts, I'll call you again. Give me a few hours. Yeah, a few hours pass. You get another phone call or you're talking to your employees that are taking a look at this or on. Yeah. You're in the position of getting some facts and the facts sound like this, like, it wasn't a truck. It was a fork truck. And yeah, it hit a bollard. And, okay. Then you make that phone call. Yeah. Okay. It wasn't a truck. It was a fork truck. It bumped into a bollard. And I'll call you back in a few hours once I have some more facts. And then maybe a bit more time passes. And then, you again and again and again, then eventually somebody's like, we didn't even bump into anything. Bob cut off his finger. Oh my God. Yeah, I get it. How much of that information changes from the first moment that you hear of an event to the very last phone call that you have to make related to that event? And the answer to that question is usually everything. At the very least, a lot. A lot changes because we're still in respond and contain mode and gather immediate facts mode. And if you're trying to learn and improve, if you're trying to do a learning team within the first couple of hours after doing an event, it's going to suck. Yeah, because you don't have all the information. If you try to issue corrective actions from your learning review or accident investigation, those actions are going to suck because you don't have enough information. What I'm telling you is what I told you right at the beginning of this little rant is do not try to learn and improve when you are in respond and contain. Let the dust settle. Let the dust settle. Of course, you should be putting some thought into what does learning look like after this dust settles? What's the right framework? What's the right tool to use here? What's the right approach to use here? What's that combo look like here based on what we know right now? But don't just jump and start doing that. Let the dust settle. We get so excited about this. Like, oh my God, did something bad happen? We need to have corrective actions. Yesterday, give me 47 corrective actions before the end of shift. Yeah, and it never works out very well for us. Okay, so there you have it. The CSCL framework. What do you think about it? Make sure you go over to the website and you check it out. Thehopnerd.com/resources is right there, or you can find it in the corresponding blog post to this podcast, or blogcast, as we have been calling it around here. And that is the Care, Stabilize, Communicate, Learn framework. Download it. Go put it to use within your organization. In those moments, post-event, when stress is high, emotions are high, we're primed up to react rather than respond, this is one of those situations where you can give your leaders a something full of better questions to help move them down that path to keep us from just jumping over into Kool-Aid Man. Everybody's fired. Yeah. So give it a shot. By consciously moving through these different steps, we can really shift from that reactive firefighting mode on being attacked by a bear mode into a thoughtful, caring response. Where we really, really, really answer that first question that we asked, which is really the point of all of this framework. Again, you can find it over on the website, but we're answering that first question. How can my response best demonstrate care for everyone involved, and prioritize learning? I like it. I love it. I got to have more of it. And again, if you've got to have more of it, or numerous other resources such as downloadable videos or anything else that you might be looking for in this world of human and organizational performance, we've got a lot of it for absolutely free at www.thehopnerd.com. You can also learn about the services that I provide. You can book an initial consult, which means you can throw time on my calendar. We can catch up and we can talk about how I can help you with human and organizational performance, how I can help you with operational curiosity and learning, how I can help you with starting points. You can find all that stuff over at the website. If you do need that hand, get in touch. Ding, 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 ding. I'm your person. I know that I'm your person. Yeah, I got to throw the party horn in there. No, wait for it. Hold on, wait a second. Party horn. Party horn. Sorry. I just love it. I can't help it. I've discovered it, and I can't stop. Someone help me. I need to go to party horn recovery. But get in touch, thehopnerd@gmail.com. I would love to come out and be a part of your human and organizational performance journey. I'm passionate about this stuff. It's quite literally my life's work, and I spend time with organizations of all different shapes and sizes. I have spent time with hundreds of them all around the globe, helping them do the stuff that we've been talking about throughout this What Now miniseries, the stuff that we explore in the podcast, broadly speaking, but especially in this, how the heck do we do this in real life? How do we operationalize, is the fancy pants way of saying it, but how do we do this in real life? That's what I specialize in, because I've spent my entire life, my professional life, doing just that in chairs similar to yours, in organizations similar to yours, not as a consultant, but as the person that people say, hey, figure this out. Yep. Been there, and I can help you get where you want to go with human and organizational performance. So we'll continue this series until we decide not to continue this series. As we said at the beginning, we're going to continue on to those tenets of safety differently and pepper in some maybe normal episodes in between, such as the upcoming episode with Becky Ray. It's going to be awesome. You're going to like it, love it. You're going to have more of it. And there we go. Check out the website. Get in touch. Until next time, it is Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd. Oh, and download the CSCL Post-Event Framework over on the website. Until next time, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd, signing off. I love you. Mean it. Bye, everybody. Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hop Nerd Podcast, the Hop Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehopnerd.com or send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye. Are you looking for a handy-dandy, easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show.
Ever catch yourself thinking, I could do this on my own? If you're a safety officer with real-world skills, you don't have to wait for permission to build your freedom. On Saturday, January 31st, I'm hosting Safety Consultant 101, a free live workshop. In 2 hours, I'll help you package your expertise into a service clients will pay for, and set pricing boundaries so you don't get stuck doing free advice forever. Register now at safetyconsultant101.com. Let's build your freedom.